from KQED.
This is Forum. I'm Michael Krasny. The California Coastal Commission has lobbied for four decades for the power to fine anyone who violates laws protecting beach habitat and public access. And this week, they may just get it. Until now, the commission has had to engage in costly and extended legal battles to penalize offenders who, in a number of cases, have chosen simply entirely to ignore the commission. But California's Senate is voting on a bill later this week to give the commission fining power. And the bill's backers argue that the commission should have direct control over fining transgressors. But a coalition of business disagrees, and that group says fines levying by the commission would diminish due process and could lead to abuse. We want to take up the debate in this forum segment. And joining us, Paul Rogers, managing editor of KQED Science and environmental reporter for the San Jose Mercury News. And good morning, Paul.
Good morning.
Glad to have you. Also glad to have Sarah Christie with us by phone from Sacramento, legislative director of the California Coastal Commission. Welcome, Sarah Christie.
Thank you, Michael. Good morning, Paul.
And good morning also to Jennifer Thompson, who's joining us from the state capitol. She's an attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation. Welcome, Jennifer Thompson.
Thank you very much. Happy to be here.
Glad to have you all aboard. And let me begin, Paul Rogers, with you. I mean, one could make the argument that up until now, and many have, the Coastal Commission's been rather paper tiger. It oversees development public access along the 1,100-mile coastline, but there have been only four cases taken to court in the past decade, and there are 1,800 open enforcement cases. Now, as I understand it, at least from looking at that on the surface, that doesn't seem like a lot of enforcement.
Yeah, you know, there are 1,837 backlogged enforcement cases right now that the Coastal Commission has. Some of these date back 20 years. And the Coastal Commission has a reputation for being pretty tough, and there are a lot of property owners who have never really liked the commission. You know, they think that its bureaucracy is pretty Byzantine and difficult to deal with. They have taken it to court multiple times for things like requiring that property owners put a public path through their property as a condition of getting a permit to build something. On the other hand, most other government agencies that deal with the environment in California, like the State Department of Fish and Wildlife and the California Air Resources Board, they can already fine people. So if you have a factory that's breaking the law and putting out too much air pollution, they can get a fine from the...
Excuse me, Paul, there are, to my understanding, actually 20 state regulatory agencies which can levy fines.
Exactly, yeah. It's most of the ones that deal with the environment. And so the Coastal Commission doesn't have that power, and it's sort of a loophole that I think a lot of the public doesn't quite realize. And I wrote a story about this not long ago, and I looked into why that actually was. And it turns out that a lot of people may remember voters in 1972 passed Prop 20, which was the ballot initiative that created the Coastal Commission. And they did this because they were really concerned about a lot of sprawl development that was starting to happen on the coastline and development that was blocking the public's access to the beach, you know, places like Sea Ranch up in Sonoma County. And so that passed pretty widely. It was 55-45. But in the fine print of that ballot measure said that the Coastal Commission would only exist for 4 years unless the legislature wrote laws to make it more permanent. And so in 1976, then-Governor Jerry Brown signed a bill that barely passed the legislature that made the Coastal Commission permanent and put in place some rules. But the guy who was the author of that bill, a state senator from San Jose named Jerry Smith, who's now retired and is a sculptor down in Saratoga, told me the other day that at the time they were so desperate to just keep the Coastal Commission alive and get enough votes in Sacramento to keep it going that they didn't even really think about whether or not it should issue fines or what the mechanism would be. You know, he said they were right down counting every last little vote. And so ever since then, ever since the commission was made permanent, this gap of ability to fine violators for things like blocking access to the beach has existed for 40 years.
Paul Rogers, again with us this morning from the South Bay, is managing editor at KQED Science and Environmental Reports for the San Jose Mercury News as well. And Sarah Christie is legislative director for the California Coastal Commission. And I know you, Sarah, you only have presently 12 people in the enforcement division with really no power except a cease and desist order that's often ignored. And it's very costly, but the other side is saying if you can levy fines, it'll incentivize all kinds of bounty hunting, you know, trying to seek getting more capital and acting as lawyer for private property people said, as judge, jury, and executioner. Drunk on power is kind of the phrase I keep hearing from the other side.
Well, you know, that is the image that the opposition raises to try and frighten people away from this concept. But the reality is there's no basis in fact for that. As Paul mentioned, virtually every other state regulatory agency has this authority, and it's not just the ones that we typically think of, like Fish and Wildlife and the Air Board. It's also, agencies like the California Olive Oil Commission and the Beef Checkoff. The state ag commissioner has the ability to fine $5,000 a head for people who sell cattle without checking the right box on the sales form. So administrative fines is just a standard routine enforcement tool that every other state agency and most local governments already have, and there's no evidence that those agencies have used that as bounty hunters. But I have to point out that in the bill that we're discussing today, which is AB 976 by Assemblymember Tony Atkins, there's a provision in the bill that was taken as an amendment because of the opposition's concerns about this, that the Coastal Commission isn't even going to keep the money that we recover from fines. That's going to go to the State Coastal Conservancy, which is a completely separate agency, and it'll be used to fund things like constructing new public access ways and doing wetland restoration projects. So there's no bounty to hunt for the Coastal Commission in this bill.
Well, what about that, Jennifer Thompson, that the money will not be going there? It'll be going to the Coastal Conservancy Agency, and also the fact that, as we're hearing pointed out, 20 other agencies have this ability to regulatory prerogative to fine and levy fines. Some say, how can you have a highway patrolman cite somebody for speeding without giving them a ticket? Or you have libraries giving fines for late books. Why can't the Coastal Commission fine?
Sure. I think the real difference here is that most of those other agencies are regulating discrete industries, and the amount of the fines is limited. Here we're talking about regulating homes, of millions of homes along California's coast, many of these homeowners have no idea that they're violating the Coastal Act, and that's one of another difference is that the Coastal Commission regulates a very broad array of activities. It has jurisdiction over all development along the coast, and that has been interpreted extremely broadly to include, for instance, a 15-minute fireworks display. And so the real problem here is that if you look hard enough along the coast or on anyone's property, you're going to find violations everywhere because there's just such a broad regulatory authority here. So that really distinguishes this situation from other agencies. And also, the fines, they're allowed to levy under this bill up to $1,200 in fines per day. So that's going to be really ruinous for property owners, particularly single-family homeowners. It takes most of the time, if you receive an enforcement action, you need to get a coastal development permit to fix the problem. That takes 6 months, at least, to get that permit. And so we're talking here about penalties that will exceed the value of the property and will be ruinous.
What about, Sarah Christie, too much in the way of penalty, ruinous potential penalty, too much money, and too many violations, which is what we're hearing from Jennifer Thompson?
Well, I want to thank Jennifer for bringing up a really important point, and that is that the nearly 2,000 open, unresolved, verified violations in our backlog is really just the tip of the iceberg. The truth is that there's many, many more violations around the state that we don't know about, and we have an opened a case file.
You have to wait till you get a phone call, pretty much, don't you?
Pretty much, yeah. We don't have any. I know we've been accused of being the cops on the beat and the judge on the bench, but we don't actually have coastal cops. We don't have any staff that's going out and looking for violations. These are all violations that are reported to the commission, but. It would be so great if the opposition would actually read the bill, because there are numerous safety hatches in the bill that would protect against unknowing, minor, unintentional violations and instances where the violator is willing to work cooperatively with the commission to resolve the violation. In those cases, there would be not only no fines levied, there wouldn't even be an enforcement order. And in fact, the Coastal Commission now spends an inordinate amount of time with property owners trying to get them to resolve their violations voluntarily. But the problem is, violators know that there's no penalty at the end of the line, and so they can run the clock out, and they do routinely for years, and continue to benefit from their unpermitted tennis court in the wetland, or their golf course in the sand dune, or the public access way that they have blocked in order to privatize the beach in front of their house. They get to benefit from that that development for years and years and years with no threat of a fine at the end of the process when we finally do resolve it. So I think it's really important to look at what are we talking about here in terms of the violations. We're talking about legal public access ways that have been blocked from public use. We're talking about access that was required as a condition of development that have never been provided. We're talking about literally sand dunes that have been bulldozed in the middle of grunion running season. We're talking about some pretty serious and egregious violations that we go after because we don't have the staff to go after the minor ones. We only go after the big ones.
All right, I want to give Jennifer Thompson an opportunity to respond, but I also want to give listeners an opportunity to join us, and let me do that now. In fact, if you want to weigh in on this controversy about what the Senate is about to decide, if the Coastal Commission can fine Coastal Act violators, you may want to join us by phone, and you can do that by calling our toll-free number, which is 866-733-6786. You can call us now at that number. Again, it's toll-free to you, open to you, 866-733-6786, or email us forum@kqed.org, or go right to our website, which is kqed.org/forum, and click on this segment, or, of course, you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle's @kqedforum. And Jennifer Thompson, in addition to kind of responding to Sarah Christie's argument that maybe you haven't read the bill close enough and that there are some safety fallbacks written into it in its present form. And again, we're talking about Assembly Bill 976, which will be going to the Senate. There's also the argument that big business and big oil and big ag is mainly on your side. That is the side of the opposition here.
Well, first of all, I'd like to say that we have a history here at Pacific Legal Foundation of representing single-family homeowners against the commission. And so It's one thing to point to big industries who will be subject to these fines, but the reality is that the bill is written so that a single-family homeowner who has a violation that could be anything from, you know, they purchased the property not realizing that the prior owner had put up a fence, and that violates the Coastal Act. They didn't know that they needed to get a permit to put up the shed in their backyard. We're talking about small things here. The bill is written so that those all fall within this $1,200 a day, up to $1,250 a day fine. And I have read the bill, and I don't think that these protections for small, unknowing violations are strong enough to protect against the use of this, against property owners for minor things. Also, I'd just like to add that one of our something that we cherish in our tradition of protecting rights is that if government accuses you of violating the law, you have a right to your day in court to challenge that. And if someone is indeed bulldozing wetlands, I agree that that sounds egregious, and there should be no problem in submitting evidence to a court giving the person who has been accused of violating the law the opportunity to defend himself or herself in court.
All right, we're going to go to your calls. First, let me just go back to Paul Rogers. Paul, this will likely be before the Senate this week. It's gone up before and gone down. Any prediction in terms of what's going to happen?
Well, what's interesting here is this is one of the, I think, most significant environmental bills that's still alive in Sacramento. There's only about 3 weeks left in the legislative session this year. A lot of the other high-profile bills, like a statewide ban on plastic bags and more strict rules on fracking and things like that, have gone down, even though those tend to be supported by Democrats, and Democrats have supermajorities in both chambers. And the reason is that there are a number of Southern California Democrats in the Senate, people like Ron Calderon or Rod Wright, people like that, who do not side with the Northern California members who vote with environmental groups. A lot of times the Southern California guys vote more with industry. And so although this bill already passed the Assembly, this bill on the Coastal Commission, by a 42-32 vote, The vote in the Senate is going to be close. And, you know, I think one thing that hasn't been mentioned is that the author of the bill has watered it down somewhat because of these kind of concerns that we've heard. And one of the biggest examples of that is she said that it would take effect only for a trial period if it passes for 3 years, ending in 2017. So if there are problems with it, those one would think would come to mind. I think the opponents are worried that once it gets a toehold, then it'll be really hard to dislodge it.
Do you have any advice for a listener named Julie who says, how can Californians help support this bill?
I'm on neither side of the bill, but what I would recommend is that she go to a website called Ledge Info, which is where LEGINFO, which is where you can track any bill in California. You type in the number of the bill, AB976, and then you can see under the bill analysis who supports it and who opposes it. So you can write letters to those folks. You can join their organizations. You can also find out from some of the environmental groups who are supporting this, groups like the Sierra Club California, which members they're leaning on the most to write letters to or if you oppose the bill, against.
And again, you can join us. Our toll-free number, 866-733-6786, or go to our website or our Facebook page, and we'll go to your calls. We'll begin with Lori, who joins us from Los Beach, California. Welcome, Lori.
Hi, that's actually Moss Beach.
Okay.
Yeah. Anyway,
I wondered where Lost Beach was. I must
Yeah, nobody knows. I've got an acre of land that's under Coastal Commission regulation, and I sought to have a change of zoning for it so that I could change what is a residential house into a commercial site with very little impact. And everybody in the community, anybody I've talked to, has said, yes, this is a great idea. So we applied for change of zoning, and if the woman from the Coastal Commission is talking about people stalling and throwing up roadblocks, she has not looked in the mirror lately. I was asked why I'm not farming this 1 acre of land. I was told that the entire Coastside community has to do a traffic plan before they would even consider looking at my proposal, for which I paid $10,000 and submitted an 800-page document. So it goes both ways, and if somebody's going to be fined and then have the Coastal Commission throwing up these kind of roadblocks at $1,200 a day, then it's basically extortion. They're going to have to either pay up or surrender, and that's just not the way the system's supposed to work.
And you say what, Sarah Christie?
Well, you know, it's difficult to address specific situations when I don't have any background on them, but I would just offer a few thoughts on that. The first is that what Lori's talking about is a change of zoning. It's a change of use of the property. It's not dealing with an existing violation. Fortunately, Lori didn't just go ahead and change the use of her property without getting the proper approvals. And so she's actually engaged in a different process.
My point is that I was stalled and stalled and stalled and stalled.
You went through a lot of bureaucratic hassling, yeah. I mean, that's what I'm hearing, Lori, right?
Sorry?
You went through a lot of formidable bureaucratic walls and hassles.
And money.
And money, yeah, right.
So the next thing that I'll say is that that's the type of land use change that is typically handled first by the local government and secondarily by the Coastal Commission. And the third thing that I would point out is that the Coastal Act does have very strong policies within the law to protect coastal resources, including agricultural resources. It sounds like Lori's ground might be agricultural ground, and she's and ag is a priority use that gets protected under the Coastal Act. If she was seeking to change the zoning on that property so that she could do something unrelated to agriculture, then that request has to be weighed against the policies in the Coastal Act, the policies in the law. And so I don't doubt that she had a difficult and perhaps frustrating time trying to accomplish what she wanted on her property, but the policies in the Coastal Act are the reason why the coast of California still looks the way it looks today. It's the reason why there still are agricultural fields in the coastal zone, and it's the reason why you can still get to the beach without owning a $1 million mansion. So they may cause those policies may cause individual hardships from time to time, but overall, collectively, how the law has been implemented, I think, has been greatly to the benefit of California and the general public.
Well, let me thank Lori for her call. And actually, Jennifer Thompson, I want to we'll get some response from you, but also get response to what a listener writes on our website. When enforcement is in response to complaints, a system invariably develops in which the regulatory body disproportionately metes out punishment. The agency becomes a tool of the most vocal and or the most well-connected. In other words, the actions of the agency are politicized with no reasonable check and balance. It is a formula for injustice, and I think that's what you in opposition to this bill are saying, isn't it?
Absolutely. And one of the problems is that the Coastal Commission is not a good body for weighing the credibility of evidence. In the types of hearings that the bill contemplates, where it would be decided whether or not to impose civil penalties and how much, there's no sworn testimony, no right against self-incrimination. You have no right to confront the witnesses who are saying that you violated the coastal law. You have no right to know how the commission found out about an alleged violation. There's no rules of evidence. There's no rules against hearsay. It's just, it's not a good forum for figuring out who is telling the truth and who is not telling the truth. And another problem is, Ms. Chrissy talked about the fact that the commission is not out looking at violations. Well, they don't have to, because typically a neighbor doesn't like what another neighbor is doing. Maybe they are violating the coastal act, and maybe they just don't like the fact that they've moved next door and are developing on a vacant lot, and, you know, their view is going to be compromised or something like that. And so it's very easy for someone to find a coastal act violation in that type of setting. So people often do have alternative motives for reporting these things to the commission, and there's not enough due process guarantees, and there's not enough oversight here for giving the commission this type of enforcement power.
And again, Jennifer Thompson is an attorney with the Pacific Legal Foundation, and our next caller is John from Alameda. Good morning, John.
Yeah. The Coastal Commission has been seriously underfunded ever since it was founded, as far as I can see, since it hasn't had anybody available, hadn't had a staff to keep track of what's going on, never mind try and deal with these complaints. And that needs to be remedied. I'm wondering if that's happening. And I'm kind of concerned about the what sounds almost like a disingenuous set of arguments from the Legal Foundation, that the individual property owners can, now, as I understand it, they can keep doing this forever without any responsibility, and where does their responsibility come into play to the rest of us, such as down in La Jolla, where they keep posting fake private fake signs that say no trespassing, or public signs that say no trespassing, when they're not public signs and not legally erected.
Yeah, let me actually go to your first question first, John. And Paul Rogers, the underfunding of the commission, and by the way, one might also add the difficulties with leadership of the position because of the death of its former head last year. It's presumably a weaker commission because of lack of funding and because of lack of leadership.
Well, I would take those two separately. There's no question that the staff is a lot smaller than it was a generation ago. The staff of the Coastal Commission right now is 135 people, and that compares with 212 people in 1980. There are 1,100 miles of California coastline for those folks to oversee. The budget right now is about $19 million. It's bumped up a little bit in the last year, but it is half of what it was in 1980 when adjusted for inflation. Now, you can make the same point about many environmental agencies such as state parks, but there's no question the Coastal Commission is smaller now than it was before. In terms of leadership, I don't actually agree with that. Peter Douglas, for many years, who was a co-author of the Coastal Act and was executive director and basically gave the commission its reputation for being dogged and tough. He died of cancer a year ago. The current executive director, Charles Lester, was Peter Douglas's number two. So he's been there a long time. He knows the rules. The commissioners sort of come and go depending on their appointments by Sacramento leaders. But I think in terms of the staff, it's not like you have a new guy in there running the show who doesn't know what he's doing. I'll just mention one other thing about the caller, and I don't know about her particular case, the woman who bought the land zone ag. We see this all the time in every community in California. I don't think it's actually unique to the coast. People buy land cheap that is zoned for farming, and then they want to develop something on it. It happens in Silicon Valley. It happens in Marin, and all over the place. And then they go to the Coastal Commission or the local city council or the county supervisors, and they try to get a permit to build a house or a business on it, and people fight them. And, you know, that will happen whether you're on the coast or not, because folks in California, a lot of them, don't want to see ag land developed. And there's no question the Coastal Commission is tough about protecting ag land. And that's pretty miserable if you're a property owner who wants to convert ag land to development. The other side of that coin, however, is I think if you put this up for a vote in California saying, do you want the commission to allow people to more easily develop open space on the coast or not, you'd probably get about 70-30 or 80-20 in favor because most people in California don't own oceanfront real estate, but most people in California like to go to the beach and they like the views. And so that's a difficult thing for property owners. They want fewer regulations to allow them to do what they want, but the voters of California want even tougher regulations usually when these kind of things are put on the ballot. They want to be able to go to the beach. They don't want the views messed up.
But what about that caller's point, Jennifer Thompson, that some of these property owners just stick up signs saying, you know, no trespassing, you will be fined and so forth, and they have no authority to do that?
Yeah, no, I think that is certainly a problem. I think that is a terrible thing for people to do. My understanding in those sign cases is that it's often difficult to figure out who, in fact, has put up this sign. I have no doubt that erecting false signs violates a slew of local laws, state laws, and also the Coastal Act. So I certainly agree that that is a problem. I think, though, the real issue here is that if you are going to the claim about the backlog of enforcement actions, most people, I think, when they receive a notice of a violation or notice of enforcement action, many people are willing to play ball. The commission deals with enforcement actions at its meetings every single month. Many of those are resolved to the commission's to the mutual agreement of the commission and the property owner. Most people, when they receive this type of statement from a state agency, do take it seriously and take steps to fix the problem.
Yeah, but it's not everybody's like Sean Parker, I guess, of Napster and Facebook, who gave $2.5 million to the agency for that wedding that he did down there, Big Sur, but it was voluntary. This will continue to be debated. In fact, you can continue to debate it by going to our website and posting more comments on it. And you can find the bill on our website, kqed.org/forum. Click on this segment. Again, thanks to Paul Rogers from KQED Science and Environmental Department here and the San Jose Mercury News, Sarah Christie from the California Coastal Commission, and Jennifer Thompson from the Pacific Legal Foundation. Hour up ahead, we're going to discuss Hamlet. Join us for that. Thank you for joining us for this. For all of us here at KQED, I'm Michael Krasny.
Funds for the production of Forum are provided by the members of KQED Public Radio and the Germanicos Foundation and the Generosity Foundation, and by a generous gift from Jan Schrem and Maria Minetti Schrem, who believe that all people deserve access to education, information, and culture for a lifetime of exploration and learning.